Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, all flight controllers, I'm going around the horn. Make your go-no goes based on the data you had printed LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're going fine.
Okay, retro, go. Fido,
go.
Guide,
go.
Control,
go.
Telcom,
go.
GNC,
go.
Econ,
go.
Surgeon,
go.
Capcom, we're go to continue PDI.
Coming to you live from the Haunted Studios in Shingle Springs, California, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your host, John Almada.
And a beautiful night in the Sierra Nevadas out here in Northern California. I am your host, John Almada, as that other guy here said off of the tape there. And it's beautiful out. I just opened the door to kind of air the house out, and it's just a neat day. I mean, a lot of people, it was great going to work, you know, because as some of you know, I work in an industry where we do a little bit of propulsion work. And it was a lot of smiles around because of yesterday's news of the evil one, the evildoer, was dispatched to Hades. And I think he was, they buried him at sea. And I was making the joke with some friends about that they put concrete galoshes on him so he could sink faster to the bottom. But and we put a bunch of jokes out on my wall on Facebook. Dan was chuckling out here in the chat room about some of the things that I had to say. And I'll tell you, there's two sides to this. I mean, some people are kind of reviled at the whole notion of celebrating the death of someone. But, you know, I had personal contacts with some of the folks that didn't make it through 9/11, so I took that pretty tough, and I stayed in the business because of that. Matter of fact, I ended up getting my degree in night school because of 9/11, so I had a personal interest in this and was just really glad to see they finally got the SOB, and he's sitting on the bench next to Hitler going, huh, what? Why am I here on Group W bench, huh? So, but, you know, the other side of it is, yeah, it is a human being. I think that the way they handled him at the end of the kill, as they say, was fairly dignified considering who this person was. And they gave him a Muslim funeral, although there seems to be this disagreement, which always is going to happen. No matter what we would have done, it wouldn't have been right. But I think the United States did take as the best course it could. Some interesting aspects to this whole thing because, you know, some of the first pictures from the White House Situation Room are coming in. And it was just amazing stuff to see how they were able to get a live video feed with the SEAL team in action. And it was SEAL Team 6. You know, these are the guys you use first, kind of like Top Gun. You know, you send in the best of the best of the best with honor, sir. And they sent these guys in with this technology and the president and all the senior White House staff were able to watch this incredibly complicated attack go off live, and were able to actually do command and control from that room. And they had everybody was there, and the pictures just came out in the last 2 hours. So I recommend go out and take a look at that. Yeah, I got the hankering tonight just to do another show. I'm not going to do this, overdo it too much. I think that you can get too much exposure on Blog Talk doing show after show after show. But I've been away for a while, and I've been missing the mic, so I've been on the last few days, and I just decided tonight, what the hell, I'll get on and have a nice show. We'll just kind of play it by ear, see who calls in, have some fun. I sort of announced this late, so I'm not expecting a lot of folks in, but a lot of regulars are in. I see Dan popped in, and he was laughing at my Facebook postings, and Joy is here, Fire Witch. Hello, my dear, big hug to you. We've got Frank is in the audience, and he's got his Apple, trusty Apple, and I've got my little orange sherbet now on my icon. Open Wings with Hazel, she's got her beautiful little, what is that? It's a heart. And last but not least, TKO Star is with us. So I'm going to open the chat line for pretty much any subject. If you want to call in, what's this with MIB? Men in Black. So if you want to call in and just talk anything, feel free. Otherwise, I'm just going to prattle on about whatever I feel like. I've got 90 minutes. Actually, close to it. About an hour and 27 minutes remaining in the show, so we're just going to have some fun tonight. I'll take a few breaks, give everybody a bio break, go water the trees, off and on. So we'll do that and play maybe a music piece or two. And feel free to pop stuff into the chat room, and I'll comment on different, if you have questions or you want to get my input or you want to talk amongst yourselves, and I'll chime in. But the number is 646-478-0377, as always. Now, TKL Star says, did you see when Anderson Cooper on CNN interviewing a man today, the guest says to Anderson, I guess Osama is now finding out that there aren't any virgins at the bottom of the sea. Yeah, that's you got to wonder what his frame of mind was when he heard the first helicopters come popping into that compound. I mean, that had to be an utter shock to him that he could have been found. When you stop to think about it, though, when you go up against an information society, in a full-blown superpower, and you walk in and you blow up their biggest buildings and kill a lot of their, citizens in their capital cities and their fiscal capitals, you're going to have some visits down the road. Somebody's going to come in and have a talk with you. And so I suspect he knew eventually his number would be up. And I think what he was trying to do was build such a legend that he would become like a fixture in the Arab world. Because of that, and he to some degree he succeeded. He changed the world, really. I mean, when you look at it, look at the changes in our free and open society, that we cannot even go on an airplane now without being frisked, literally frisked, and in ways that just are even now I find abhorrent. I find it difficult to even think about jumping on a plane and going places now. I decry the loss of those freedoms. On the other hand, I understand why some of these things have happened. So, hopefully, the world will grow from the experience of all this, and maybe the Arab world will learn, from all this, that you can't go around just bludgeoning people into your way of seeing things. And I hope it gets better. I really do. But at the same time, I'm glad this guy's gone. I really am. I think he caused a lot of pain to a lot of people. And it's just it's a shame that 3,000 individuals who were just going to work and going on trips, back then on 9/11, were caught up in this man's anger, and these people's anger. Al-Qaeda does remain dangerous, and they are out there. I tried to just kind of sense what the mood was from the other side on this, and the feeling I got just in kind of thinking it through today was that it's there's a lot of sadness on their side about all this too, you know, and he's being dealt with appropriately, his spirit. He came here, I think, well, Mr. Bin Laden, to learn a difficult lesson. And I don't know. I don't believe in hell, but I believe he's got a lot of answering to do for all the lives he did take. And so, you know, that's, you know, my thoughts on this subject. I think that the celebration stuff will die down in the next couple of days, and then the what next stuff is going to happen. You know, Al-Zawahiri is still out there. There's a whole bunch of offshoot organizations, especially Yemen, that are out there that are causing this kind of causing troubles. You know, and here we are in the middle of a fiscal crisis of our own, and we've got a lot to deal with, a lot of challenges. So as a country, we are in a growth period. I do think that we're finding out what's important, you know, here on this side of the veil. What is important for us to live day by day, and what do we really need to live versus what would we'd like to have? And I think that if we stop and look at the United States itself, the things that are going on are a function of learning what necessities really make life, you know, bearable, and what makes life interesting. And makes us challenge ourselves rather than, you know, digesting some pre-digested stuff that's fed to us, you know, as news or fed to us as products, endless products that you have to have for doing all these things that you know we want to do and our endless desire for more things. I think sometimes lack does stimulate spiritual growth, and I think that's something that's we're going to be experiencing more of, unfortunately, in some ways down the road. So. I think an interesting year or two ahead for us. You know, it's, I feel like what is going to happen will drive people really together, you know, and you're starting to see it now. People are pulling together in the communities and helping each other in a lot of ways, and I'm seeing it more and more. I was just out the other day on a metal detecting thing that I was doing, and I've taken up that hobby, and I ran into this woman, and I've talked about it on the show yesterday with this Italian lady, and her name was Lara, and she, real pretty lady, very nice, and her husband had passed away, and I did an impromptu reading for her, and it was, I picked out her husband's name pretty much right out of thin air, and she was blown away, and then she broke out crying, and it was tough. But at the end, she wanted to invite me to come out and to be a part of some of the community gatherings that are going on. And I found out there's quite a vibrant group getting together out here that are, you know, they have luncheons, and there's, you know, the community gets together and does all sorts of interesting activities and goes places. And it's just nice to see that that stuff is out there, and people are turning more and more to it. Because the expense of going on trips, you know, at $4 a gallon, soon to be $6, $7, $8 a gallon, are going to drive some of that. So that's definitely going to be a thing to consider. Now, I talked a little bit about metal detecting. I'm going to get on to something a little more fun. I am going out on the 21st of May. I'm going to be taking the Mustang on a somewhat longer than I had anticipated trip. Out to Lake Tahoe. I'm meeting up with a friend from Lake Tahoe, and she and I are going to go up to a beach over on the west side, on the California side of Lake Tahoe, and take my new underwater metal detector out, and we're going to go out and knock a few rings out. Maybe I might find something valuable, a treasure or two. We'll take some EVP recorders with us, too, and see if we can pick up anything out there. Maybe we'll find a haunted spot or two to hit on the way. So I got that kind of planned out. But, yeah, I'm going to be mixing more metal detection in with the paranormal stuff and try that. Spence and I have been talking quite a bit about where we're taking GRI. I've been mentioning this off and on. We had to take a break from everything because of all the physical stuff that was going on in our lives, and I think everybody was going through this kind of thing. So you know, it's good to see return to some of the things that we value. Probably not as much of it as we did before, but we're still going to hunt ghosts. And I have a Stockton investigation at a site we did before. A friend of mine named Dan down in Stockton has access to the Masonic Lodge down there, and that place is really uber haunted. So we're going to go back in there. I got some really great Class A EVPs in there. I mean, we'll do a special show about that, that particular hunt, and play the EVPs from it right on air, and do our I've been wanting to do reveals on air. I think that's a really neat thing that I don't think you'd see too many people do that. So we'll see if we can pull one of those off and try some new ideas and just have some fun. God, you guys are not calling in. Somebody call in, for God's sakes. I'm just sitting here prattling on, but I can do that for a long time. I can prattle on all you want. So, I mean, if somebody wants to, Joy is always good for this. I see her out there. Joy, I know you've got the computer. You can do this. You can call in on Skype. So I'm waiting to see if her, I think her handle starts with an H, you know, and, but are you guys even hearing me? I mean, the talk room or the chat room has gone completely silent. Come on, guys, pop up there. I'm feeling alone out here. Good Lord. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to pop a couple of things on here and, let me see. I am going to check something because there was some stuff on Fox News and get off this stuff with, oh yes, Dan Adams says yes, okay. And, but science, space shuttle. I happen to work in the business where my company makes the orbital maneuvering system engines for the shuttle. And so we're down to the last two launches. There could be a third. You know, there's a launch delay with Endeavour. I think it was the auxiliary power units and also the heating system were having troubles on Endeavour, so they had to delay this launch. And I guess you know, they're saying here in the news, excuse me, it's a $500,000 price tag. And, you know, and a government that's spending $1 trillion or $2 trillion over its income level, they're worrying about $500,000. Okay. Especially for something as valuable as science coming from, you know, space exploration and things like that. I don't know if you guys realize that, but space exploration, I think their payback for every dollar we put into space is like something on the order of $10 to $15. So for every dollar you put into a space mission and exploration and going up there and doing research, you get all this money back. And look at how long we've had the space station up. You know, that's been since 1998 the first module went up. And that's going to run clear into, I think, about 2020, 2025, before they basically bring that whole system down. Let's see. Firewitch says something is going on today. Malachi is MIA. Oh, she has a sore throat. Okay. Well, we won't put you through that there, you know, Joy, but it's good to see you here. Big hug to you. But anyway, that's, you know, with regard back to the shuttle, one of the things that really disappointed me, having worked in the space industry as long as I have, has been the way this program ended, and we didn't have a good, viable program already up and running at the end when we rolled down the shuttle program. And, you know, it's just blowing me away because United Space Alliance, who operate the shuttle fleet right now, was really making a strong bid to try to buy the shuttles and continue operating the space shuttle fleet as a private enterprise. And the government was just dead set against that. And so I don't know what to think about that, but it would be interesting to see Boeing and some of the other vendors out there do a shuttle follow-on program using modern technology, because the shuttle design's close to 40, 45 years old. So it would be interesting to see if the if they decide instead to come up with a shuttle variant of their own and cooperate and start offering their own services. We're in a period, though, that I think this next 10 years is going to be kind of a bumpy ride, but the next 10 years, you will see routine access to space and eventually routine access to the point where the average citizen will be able to actually get into space and to do things that are going to be just out, flat out amazing. There's actually talk about having hotels in orbit and having space tourism. I just saw the Russians have a thing that they're talking about having a building a special booster to have tourism to the moon. And it'll be the it won't be a landing. It'll just be orbiting. They'll take a an existing Soyuz and have it orbit the moon and then come back. And the cost per per ticket is on the order of I think $150 million per ticket. So you I don't think any of us are going to get that ride anytime soon. But that is neat stuff. The fact that that's even happening is amazing. I mean, imagine being able to pick up a ticket and go to a, you know, like let's say 70 years from now, you should be able to go pick up a ticket at the airport and catch a shuttle up to orbit and then take a another shuttle that'll take you to the moon in a couple of days and then vacation there and then come back. TK Elstar says, wouldn't want to go to the washroom. You know, I agree with you on that. The whole business of going to the bathroom in space is just is a little bit. I don't know. There's just something wrong with the way those toilets work. You know, they use fans and it pulls everything down. And oh my goodness, you know, it really does hit the fan in space. Truly, I've seen too much of it, and I've talked with a few people who've worked on those technologies. My father, it worked back in the 60s. There was some research done at a company called Rocket Research up in Washington State, and they were exploring back in the 60s a Mars mission. And so this has been on the books a long time. And one of the things they had the idea was, well, we can take human manure and turn it into propellant. So they came up with a process, and there was a lot of heavy science in this, and they actually took human manure and turned it into rocket propellant. And it was really going quite well until they did the first firing. And it blew up inside the test bay and coated the entire, and there was a water injection, I guess, and they were doing some stuff with to make the whole thing burn right. And when that all happened, it turned back into its constituent components, and somebody had to go and clean that all up. It was not a fun experience, and I think that kind of ended the whole program, and it stunk in there for a while, too. So, yes, they actually tried that for real, and I think that electric propulsion and nuclear propulsion have a much brighter future than bathroom propulsion in space. You know, how many times would you have to go to the bathroom to get something into orbit? My God, with one of those motors, that's like, it's not right. So anyway, I'm still not seeing callers in, but I am going to, let's see, at 10 o'clock, I'll take a break. We'll come back in. I do think that it would be great to try a reading, although I don't know, Frank might be up for something about 10 o'clock. We'll see if Frank wants to do one of his characteristic readings. Yeah, TKL Star, that's, yeah, that it really didn't happen. I'm not kidding you. The story I'm telling you is true on this. They were looking at anything and everything, and they were willing to throw the money at it to try it. And so something was learned, but I don't know. That's just a little bit extreme, you know, and I think they were just, it wasn't like that they were all believing it would actually be a viable thing, but they were trying the technology out, and sure enough, it blew all the hell. And I guess somebody had some 409 cleaner and a lot of it to clean up the bay, but I don't know. Let's see. Let me think. What have we got? I'm looking at, holy moly, so, don't know if you guys are into the Sony PlayStation, but it says here, Sony says that hackers may have taken personal information from an additional 24.6 million user accounts after a review of the recent PlayStation Network breach found in a earlier intrusion on it at its online entertainment division. Oh, is that why Tacoma smells like that? Jeez, Dan. Is that where you live? Are you living in Washington State? You sure it's not in your yard? Oh my God. Anyway, these hackers, my God, these guys, they get serious. I mean, they're after whatever they can get. I don't know what you guys think of this, but I'm beginning to believe there is a case for something called internet borders. And the notion is that being able to come in, I'm just going to take care of something here. Is that internet borders, kind of like what you have with borders for countries, is something that may very well come around, because this whole notion of interconnecting everybody to every place to everywhere with no restrictions is showing itself to be a bit of a problem. So I do think that this notion that to have passports to be able to go from one network to the next, and basically subject yourself to monitoring and those kinds of things, is something that may end up happening. Because it's like the Wild West out there. Even now, with all the a couple of decades on the internet like we have now, I just think that we are going to see some real interesting changes. And I do think you're going to see borders, literally borders areas, and the ability to go from a United States server to an English server, for example, or United States to Irish, or United States to South Africa. Servers would be a matter of negotiation and payment and that kind of thing. And it will really put, I think, some controls in place. So I think that that's something we're going to see, and it's an unfortunate byproduct of how humans are. But I do believe that that's something that we're going to get a real taste of in the future. I've just seen too many cases, with personally, and also with just watching, Computer World and some of the other major publications, where this tendency of these people that I guess they don't have anything better to do but to break into people's accounts and break into different companies and governments' computers and do these terrible things. I think it's time to reexamine the whole foundation of the internet itself, and then put some of these controls in place and give governments their own space to control the traffic in and out, and maintain their viability as separate entities. There's going to be some in the world government community, yes, who believe that, oh, yes, we're all one world. Well, yeah, that's nice, but there's divisions in organisms for a reason, and so too in divisions in the world societies. And I think it may even go a long ways to helping preserve some cultures to see some of these borders pop up, and then for things to be done that way. So, it's just a prediction. It's just my idle observation after years and years in the business. But I do think that's going to happen. The other thing I think is, with paranormal, I mean, I'll jump subjects here. But from a paranormal perspective, I mean, I don't know. A lot of people have been talking that the paranormal train has run its course and people are getting bored with it. I don't think it's that it's run its course. I think it's become integrated into our worldview, and people are much more accepting of when you say you're a paranormal investigator and that you do some of these things than they were years and years ago. It is no longer a point that makes you a kook for saying these things. Now, and I tested it the other day. I was talking with somebody about metal detecting, and I casually mentioned I'm into paranormal investigation. And, oh, really, and they wanted to get into it and ask me questions, and I told them a little bit of what I do, and they thought that was the coolest thing ever. And when I first started just a couple of years back in 2008, you would say that, and people would look at you and go, you're what? And then they would, some of them would, were pretty enlightened. Others were like, oh, you're weird. And you see a lot less of that now. So I do think that the paranormal views that we have are really starting to kick in. And look at how it is on Blog Talk. I mean, with the huge number of shows and the rich culture around that. Thank God we do have this venue to be able to do what we do. But I am just really amazed at how it's going. And I think that shows like Taps. and some of the others, some of the long-standing shows. I think in the next year or two, they may go away, and there will be spinoffs that will come out of that. Yeah, you're right, TKL Star. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just part of what we are now as a society, and people don't see anything weird about it. But I do, you know, I do think that TAPS will have run its course. Although there will be a follow-on, maybe shows with some of the original stars. Who knows? I could be wrong there. They could go on for another 10 years. But I think they're going to have to evolve some of their techniques and change some of their formula, because it has become a formula show in some ways. And I don't like saying that, because I have a lot that I owe to TAPS, and I really respect what they do. But I think that they need to push the boundary a little bit, kind of like what Ghost Adventures does, because Ghost Adventures really does go out on a limb there, and they do a lot to. By the way, I'm making sure that we don't have some problems in chat. I've been watching some things going on, but I kind of lost track of what I was saying here. I just saw that. I just think that TAPS has. Some evolution to go through, just like a lot of these other shows. Now, Ghost Adventures, they've gone through an evolutionary phase. You know, they were like way over the top in the beginning, and now they've kind of evolved into a more sensitive kind of a show. And I like the way they're going with it. But they do bring in the devices. They try new things. They try new ideas. And sure, there's some things that they've done that are controversial. I think it's going to be the case in any paranormal show. That people are going to be very critical, and rightly so. And Paranormal State, the new class. I have not kept up with Paranormal State. I'll tell you what. That show kind of rubbed me the wrong way from the beginning, and I don't know what it was that it did. But I, knowing the spirit world like I do, I just feel that that there's. Yes, there's evil out there. Yes, there's negative entities out there. But, I just don't think that they are that dedicated to hating one guy who runs that particular show. I have seen things happen. I have been, witness to attacks. I've seen negative events happen when we've been on investigations, and we've been able to deal with it. And to deal with it handily. And I think that those sorts of things that you see on Paranormal State and some of the other shows like it, I think that's a little too sensational, a little too Hollywood. I don't know. TAPS has it about right, I think, with the way they handle it from an emotional maturity standpoint. But I think when you get into some of these others, it's, because Spencer, my friend Spencer Hughes, he always does the Chip Coffee impersonation, 666, And I just have to laugh when he does that. But it is, there's a lot of drama written into these scripts, and you're literally witnessing script writing. It's not so much, a natural flow of a true investigation, I think. So, you just take it for what it is. Even Ghost Adventures does some scripting, but at least some of the things that do happen are, from my opinion, are legitimate phenomena and are things that are unexpected. And that's what we really look for, in investigation work. I'm gravitating more and more to the mediumship side, and finding that a lot of what we see with paranormal activity is generally spirits that are lost between the worlds. They haven't fully crossed over, and they are confused, and they spend a lot of time in that void between the two worlds, and they still have the ability to affect our world. And when we do the soul streaming, and I'm just kind of going off the cuff here, but when we do the soul streaming, it really is the other side coming in, from right where they're at, and they are able to affect our electronics and do the things that we do on air in a really neat way, and I'm I'm thankful for that. But when I go out in the field and I run into these other entities what I have found is, for the most part, they are either unaware of their current situation, or they're aware of it, and for whatever reason they're staying. Most of the time they're sad, but on occasion you find a helpful one that's out there, but they've got their reasons for not crossing. And sometimes they do have good reasons, and they may stay around in there for whatever reason that they're there. But that's the minority. Most of the time it is a sad situation. And I do believe that people who do the soul rescue work and come in and help cross spirits over is a good thing. And that it is something that is a very high spiritual calling. So that's kind of the take I have on paranormal investigation down the road for us is not so much just marveling at the fact, ooh, I caught an EVP. It's what's going on with this spirit. Why are they here? What are they doing? And then deal with it from that perspective. Now, there are ones that are negative, and there are some evil entities out there. There are species of creatures out there in the astral world that were never human, not human. They're nasty as hell, and that's a whole different story. But I'm talking about when we do most of paranormal investigation, most of the time we're running into human souls. But there are those occasions, and I have had one experience that scared the hell out of me from last year where we did have something follow us home, and it was never human, and it was not good. And you have to have to stay calm and deal with it the best you can, and then call on higher powers and get help and know when to ask for help. And those kinds of things do happen, and that's an unfortunate byproduct of this business of the paranormal. So that's my thoughts on that. What do you guys think? I mean, I'll post the question to you. What's your feeling? I mean, does a lot of what I'm saying resonate out there in the chat room? And, if you have any questions for me, how did I get rid of it? I'll tell you what. I won't name the place, but I'll tell you what happened was I was brought in on the case by a friend of mine. It was Spencer. And we got to go into the facility, and what ended up happening was I took 10 steps into the building and immediately knew I was in the presence of something I'd never been in before. It was an absolutely awful feeling. It felt sticky, heavy, angry, and I ran into another medium who I thought was probably, I won't say names, but I thought he was very unprofessional, and he had some things to say to me about what this entity felt about me being in the building. And it was very negative. And I was actually kind of ticked off at him, and I just walked away. And I tried everything I could to run protection on myself. There was a group of people that were taking us touring through, and it was an interesting evening, to say the least. And there, I had a very powerful vision while I was in one room in particular where there'd been a murder. And it was actually grotesque. I mean, it was actually, it was one of those things that you see and you can't believe this is happening. And then when when it's happening, you're just in shock. And then when you're done with it, you go, okay, it was an experience. I'm glad I had it, but I don't want to do that again. And, I got out of that building and went home, and I felt like something wasn't quite right. Within the next 3 days, everyone who had been with me on the investigation, except for Spence, was calling me saying they had been followed home by something, and it was a black entity. It had a black shape, and it was showing up in people's homes, and it was following them around. In broad daylight, they were seeing this thing. We had an experience with here at my home, not with me, but with my mother, ran into it, and it decided to mess with her. And she was able to actually deal with it herself. She's a medium herself. And she called me in and says, I don't know what the hell you ran into out there, but you got to get rid of this thing. And I went, and I basically didn't get asked. I got told I was going to, do whatever it took. So she said, you brought it in here, you get it out. And I went, okay. And I took some steps, and some of that was getting a little outside help to help identify and get rid of it, and the other was doing spiritual protections and putting things around the home and where we slept that would take care of these things. And and I'm a big believer in stone magic. I don't know if Fire Witch can tell you some things about that, but I do believe that stones of different types have the ability to repel negative forces, and the proper use of them you know, this whole study in itself. So I did some of that, and it didn't mess with me directly. I was the only one that was aware this thing was out there, but it didn't come in and face me down directly, and I don't know why that was. But when we did these things that I'm talking about, the whole nature of the problem at my home, it just disappeared, and it became much lighter around the house, and everything was good. But with regard to the other people, that they were for about 2 weeks, I was getting constant calls, and I was reassuring them that it was going to be okay, telling them what to do, who to talk to, and I resolved that I would never go into that facility again. And I'm being kind of pressured to go back into it, and I don't want to. You know, there are some places, from a paranormal perspective, that you just shouldn't be going into, and this was one of them. And I really believe that there's dark things that feed in these places, especially places where there's been a lot of negativity, and that would be on the order of prisons, some hospitals, you know, where a lot of cruelty has been done. These are the places, and even some insane asylums have had this problem. But you know, I would prefer to help the human spirits that are trapped there, and then not have to deal with some of these other things. But we ran into quite a few of these entities, just regular human spirits, when I was in this facility I'm talking about. But there was this thing, and it was sticky, ugly, horrible energy. I don't know how to describe it, other than that I just knew the second I walked in, this was way different and way out of my league, you know, from what I'd run into before. My former university is a place like that. and you had to pay to be there, huh, Frank? Oh, God. Yeah, I really believe that just going on paranormal touring just because you can is okay. You know, if you're willing to take the risk, great, but there's some places that are extremely dark. I went to Wolf Manor, for example, and Wolf Manor, you know, I've noticed some things with places like that, that people that buy these facilities, they tend to have some really interesting things happen in their lives, and a lot goes right or wrong with their lives when they get into these facilities, or they buy them, and they go through all these plans that they have, and it really, the facility sort of takes over, and it's going to do what it's going to do. And I think it takes a strong personality to be able to run a facility like that. Now, for example, my good friend Sharon Coyle owns Rolling Hills Asylum. She's had a rough time of it, but she's getting a handle on running that facility, and it's really starting to pan out for her. But she had a rough time of it, and a lot happened to her getting that going. There's no rule book for this kind of thing, but the Wolf Manor facility, I noticed that there was just, it was on a similar vein to the one I'm talking about. Very, very, very dark entities in there. Lots and lots of anger, and I've never had as many Class A's as I got there in the Wolf Manor case, because it was just, there were spirits walking up to the microphone and just screaming. And I mean, I've got stuff I've never played for you guys that are absolutely disturbing as hell. Let me see here. What was being said? Talkstar. Those were just the girls who you couldn't buy a drink for. I don't know. I think universities are a lot tamer than some of the places we've been as a team, you know, with GRI. And my friends, you know, at Ghost Hunters Incorporated, they're a long-lasted team, and they've taken a nice moderate view on things. And they're not over the top, and they just do good, solid research. And they're not so spiritual like what we are about, but I think they're getting there. They seem to have opened their minds a bit to it, and we have them on quite a bit. You know, 3, 4, 5 times a year, we have them on the show. So I'm hoping to get them back. But I do think that longevity in this business of the paranormal means moderation and not trying to do too much over the top. But like the shows, like I was talking about some of the shows, you know, that's how I think TAPS has survived it. Even though they've got the formula thing going, it's fairly predictable and there's enough interest there that it does keep things going. But I do think they need to jazz it up a little bit. It's starting to get too predictable. So I don't know. Hey, we've got 44 minutes remaining. I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be right back. I'm going to hopefully we'll get some of you call in. Otherwise, I'm going to sit here and just prattle on and do what I do. But let's play a little bit of let me see what I got in the queue here. Yeah, I'll play a little less talk, a lot more action. I think that's I think kind of the byword for the government these days. And although they did some great action here the other day, so I dedicate this song to our special forces, the guys who did the real work. A little less talk, a lot more action. Here we go.
I was getting kind of tired of her in the chatter. Nothing I could say ever seemed to matter. So I took a little dive just to clear my head. I saw a flash of neon up ahead. It looked like a place to find some satisfaction with a little less talk and a lot more action. Drunk on the stew, tried to mess with my head, but I didn't even listen to a word he said. I knew somewhere amid all this distraction was a little less talk and a lot more action. Little less talk, if you please, a lot more loving is what I need. Let's get on down to the main attraction with a little less talk and a lot more action.
Action here in the chat room, and Arf Graphics says he has insight into what really happened in Pakistan. I'm not sure how what your inside sources are, but I'm going to go with the government's version for the time being, and I do believe they're going to eventually post some pictures of Bin Laden. They'll probably do a few things to dress it up so it won't be so horrific, but I think a few pictures of the old boy lying in a prone position are going to be forthcoming. But there's already a lot of the conspiracy talk. I don't know what you guys think about that, but a lot of people are showing, you know, suspicion about if he really died, and you know, this and that conspiracy, you know, they're trying to make this go away. There's all these different things going on, and it's kind of a sense of that we're not getting the truth. I always think that in any major world event that we never really do get the full truth of it, but I do think that in a case like this, with the sheer amount of public anger over what this blockhead did to us back in 2001, I tend to believe this time. I think that they're giving us some, at least a fair amount of the straight dope on it. Whatever really happened behind the scenes to get this guy killed probably going to remain out of the public eye forever, unless until we all take our trip to the other side and find out in person what really happened. I'm sure we'll find all those kinds of things out. I would love to be a fly on the wall, you know, with some of the things that go on in government and the White House and the situations that really happen that we don't know nothing about. But, you know, our elected leaders, yeah, I may not like some of the things that go on in the White House, and depending on the party in power and what they do, but I respect the office and I respect what they do. And I've made a lifetime, you know, in the business that I'm in to support that. And so I respect the office. And if they say they got him, okay, I'll believe that until I have reason not to. And I think that that's probably a good, safe bet to go with. I see, Art Graphics is here. We got Curious Listener, Fire Witch, Frank's here. We got, I think Dan had to go off to sleep. Poor guy, he was sleepy. Hazel, hello, my dear. And TKL Star. Frank, even if they show, yeah, you're right, Frank. They're going to come out and say all these things. I suppose that if you actually took the body and slammed it down on the concrete in New York City, people would still be disagreeing, you know. It's just a matter of, I just believe that if this guy is dead, and he was obviously still controlling operations based on this, if you read between the lines, they grabbed a lot of the electronics. They grabbed a whole cache of documents. And obviously it's going to break down more of Al-Qaeda's network and operations. So, I'm going to judge it by the effect it has in the future on more knockdowns of more terrorist groups out there, and hopefully that will happen as a result. And then, I mean, you can start making some judgment calls about what really occurred. But, you know, I mean, there are people out there that are still saying, oh, 9/11 was an inside job and the government did this and they did that. And it's like, I just look at that and I go, how? How could they plan everything out like that? That was such a chaotic scene, with the crazy stuff happening, and everybody was seeing it with their own eyes. Airplanes flying into buildings, there's landing gear flying off the, you know, through, completely through the buildings and out into the streets, and and the stuff that happened in the Pentagon. I mean, for God's sakes, that was an attack. It was a military attack, pure and simple, and a lot of people died, and it was horrible and it was tragic, but it happened, and it was outside anyone's control except the people who caused it. So, yeah, let's see. TK All Star says, if they took the body to the ground, zero people. They still cry conspiracy. Yeah, I mean, I sometimes I just wish life was like what you see in the X-Files. You know, it could be that way. There could be no way of knowing the real truth. And I think it may be that way in some respects, but I'm just going to have to give the powers that be their due and say, okay, I think they're giving us a fairly straight picture, you know, but until they give me cause not to believe it. And believe me, I read between the lines with the news. And I think that's our challenge. I mean, for all of you in the audience listening is when you see these great announcements, you know, it's interesting to take note of it. Yes, I'm glad the guy's dead, apparently. But I also keep my eyes open to listen to the alternatives and then see and then judge for myself over time and let time be the thing that tells us what's really happened. So much of history works out that way, and then you find out little things that you didn't know 20 years down the road, but it's just those are details. For example, I just heard something today. I know I'm going to change subjects here, but some interesting news on the whole subject of Marilyn Monroe's death just came out. And the fact that she had someone who, I guess her hairstylist was, before he died, did some tapes. And he was a real, he was like the go-to guy for getting your hair done in Hollywood and around the world. And all the stars used him. And even though Marilyn didn't like him, she made it, she spent the money on with him to get her hair done by this guy. And he was traveled with her and went all over the place. She went the day before her death, she flew up to the Calneva Lodge and met with Sam Giancana, the head of the mafia, and then flew back, and nobody knew that this happened. And it casts a whole new set of things on the, you know, what happened was because she, I guess she had a love affair with Sam Giancana. But I didn't know half of this stuff. There's a whole world there, you know, that you don't know the true histories of things. You only see just the barest skimming of the truth, you know, when you read the headlines. But when you get into years down the road, you can find out some of the real stories that were going on and the undercurrents that were going on. So fascinating stuff, the fact that she did this trip. And obviously, if you really read the way that they're going with it, is that Giancana and Frank Sinatra was involved, and this hairdresser who was with her were basically, the whole gist was to try to get her not to talk about her relationship with the Kennedys. And obviously, it didn't go well. She was going to talk about it no matter what, and they took care of business. And a very ugly thing. So it's a terrible thing, you know, what happened to her, but you start to see how things really work in the halls of power. And boy, I mean, if you cross some of these guys, they have ways. They have ways of going along their little merry path. They're keeping you quiet. So back then, it was a lot more rough and tumble than it is even now. Although I'm sure if you anger the wrong powers, you can end up kind of like Bin Laden. You can have a bad day. Yeah. Knock, knock. Who's there? Oh, SEAL team. Can we come in? Here, hold this. Stand back. We're just going to take a picture. Yes. Bang. Curious listeners, as I agree with this host, it's refreshing to hear someone take this opinion. Well, thanks a lot. Yeah. You know, I try to go down the middle with this stuff. I mean, I'm not going all over the map here, but yeah, I do think the Osama, I think he is dead. I think he's sitting at the bottom of the ocean and he's fish food right now. It is interesting to see the take that the Muslim world has had on this. There seems to be disagreement as to the proper method of burial at sea for a Muslim. And I don't know all the various angles of their religion, and obviously there's a lot to it, and there's different tenets and different beliefs, and, you know, kind of like what happens in Christianity with Presbyterians and the Catholics and, you know, Seventh-day Adventists, for example. I mean, they all have their individual take on how things should be done. And so this is interesting to see. I mean, how, and you learn a little bit just by reading some of the responses, you know. And but the two, it's funny to see them all universally jumping down America's throat, because no matter which way we did it, we were wrong. And I'm of the belief that we did the best we could, you know. And one of the things that was said was no country wanted Bin Laden's body. and they were all disagreeing, you know, all these responses that were coming back from the Muslim world. And I'm going, well, you know, I sometimes I think they just say that stuff, we would have done it this way and that, and really secretly they're glad the problem's gone too. We're going to be the bad guy no matter what. And I just think that we have to look out for our own interests. And that seems to be, you know, the thing that I think that I was really took great joy in seeing was how Americans united when the news came out in New York City and different major metropolitan areas and all around. And even today when I was at work and I was watching people and their faces were lit up. And America is back. I mean, American feelings and sentiment is back, that, you know, no matter how hard the media has tried to beat us down and make us feel bad about being Americans, We are have an undercurrent. I mean, there was a, I think in Philadelphia there was a ball game going on, and there was no announcement going on, but the smartphones were going off, and the word got out, and spontaneously they were shouting USA, USA, USA in the audience, and I mean, it just took over the whole stadium, and that tells you what the heart of America is. You know, I mean, we are a superpower, and we shouldn't run around being apologetic for our existence. And when we do act in our own self-defense, in our own self-interest, we shouldn't have to feel bad about it. And that's the thing that I think that you see too much of in media, is this this kind of this over-intellectualism. And I know that sounds a little bit off, but you can get so egg-headed about things, I think, sometimes you forget what the real important thing is, you know. And we were dealing with a really serious enemy of the United States, and the guy needed to die. and he took a one-way trip to see Allah, and Allah ain't happy with him, by the way. I was asked on the show yesterday about reading him, actually UBL, and I pointedly would not do that. Let's see what Curious Listener is saying. Exactly, they could not bury him where he could be found. You're right about that. Absolutely, because you know, if you were to bury him in some country and people found out about it, there would be a shrine to him in no time, and then it would become a major city center. Next thing you know, we've got a cult of Obama going on, or not Obama, Osama, sorry, Osama going on out there, and it's 25 years later, you got a bunch of crazies, you know, starting some movement of God knows what, and they had to do something within 24 hours so they'd be in trouble with the Muslim community. Exactly. I mean, no matter what we did, we were going to be in the wrong place. But I do think making him into fish food just off the Arabian Peninsula was kind of a good idea. And it's just, I do hope that they took pictures for proof and that we do have something there, you know, to be able to prove to the world what we've got there. And that that's probably the only area I've got any remaining concerns is, okay, let's see the proof. I want to see for myself the body. There were pictures that were taken of Saddam Hussein after he was killed, and it was obviously him. And you know, it was good to see that. It was barbaric. Absolutely, but it was worth seeing because now you know this guy's gone, really gone, and Iraq could start to actually heal because of that. And you know, and we're still in Iraq, you know. And that's another area I'm going to get into. I'm already seeing calls. Some guy on a news story I saw today was saying, okay, now that we got rid of Bin Laden, we got to get out of Afghanistan, and hell, we're still trying to get out of Iraq. You know, I mean, we're dealing with the Iranians are causing no end of trouble. And you got to wonder what's going to happen with that situation. And we've got forces on both sides, you know, of them, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq. We're going to be there for the next 50 years. I mean, there's absolutely no way we're going to go away. I think we should probably consider getting out of Europe at this point. We've been there for 75 years, for God's sakes, I think, going on that. In various aspects, and let's shut down some of those bases and save money, and then pour it all down where the trouble is. And you know, the other thing is why we are there in the first place. I mean, I'm a Republican, actually, kind of more Tea Party-ish these days, libertarian, if you will, but I'm still registered Republican. But I'm open-minded. You know, I'm not so far off one direction or another that I don't see things as they are, but. You know, we're sitting on a whole ton of oil in this country. A lot of people think that we do not have any oil left in the ground. I beg to differ. We have roughly, I think the word, it's roughly 3.2 to 3.5 times more oil than the remaining stocks of oil that exist in the Arabian Peninsula. Countries. I think that's what the number is. And I could be corrected, you know, but I'm giving you the basics is we got a whole lot more oil than those guys have. And we're going over there to bring it all over here and pay all the fees to transport it, you know, take all the risk getting it here, process it, do all the things. Then we're putting all these laws and taxes into, preventing and regulations, preventing refineries from being built. And all these things that go into, making us pay more at the pump when we're sitting on an ocean of oil and we've got offshore oil rigs that we could be out drilling again, no trouble at all, it would be able to get back into that game. And when people are talking about what happened in the Gulf here a couple of years back with that major oil spill there, the only reason that happened is because the government took away the permits for the shallow drilling and forced companies out into the deep drilling and made them take more risks. So it seems that the U.S. government has some growing up to do, I think, in my opinion. I think they should get out of the way, for one. Just stick to the things that they're good at, which is inspection and safety, and get out of this whole eco thing to the point where we're cutting our own throats. This is stupid. It's patently stupid. I mean, why would we go all the way across the ocean into a politically sensitive region and get involved with a bunch of countries that are still stuck in the 13th century, for God's sakes? I mean, does that make sense to you? I mean, I still, after, I'm 51 years old, and I've been studying this problem 20 years, and I'm still no closer to figuring it out why the hell we're over there. But it seems patently stupid to me. We've got clean well injection technologies that, we can start pulling oil out of the ground in Colorado and some of the other places where there's just a ton of oil to be extracted from oil shale. And, we're at the point now where the costs are such that it will become economical to do that. So, the Environmental Protection Agency and all these overly regulatory agencies that are so interested in pushing us into electric cars and, these kinds of things, that's a direction to go, but it's going to take us 50 years to get there. And we've got to bridge our way to that. So why not use some of the technologies we have available right now and grow our way into it? I don't have a problem getting off oil, but what I have a problem with is what's happening right now, which is stupid. And the other thing is, when you look at oil and you look at where we're going, the fact is that oil, oil is constantly replenishing on the Earth's surface. People actually think that, oh, we're burning it and it'll never be back. Well, it took millions of years for it to form, yeah, but oil keeps forming. It's made out of plant matter and swamps and things like that, and it keeps happening. And oil spills are natural. I beg to differ with that, but oil spills are natural. They do happen. And a lot of people, go, what do you mean? People cause that? No, I've seen them myself. I've been out on the ocean. I've seen natural oil spills. They happen, and it's just one of those things. But I just think that the notion that we should burn oil to get from A to B is kind of dumb, as a long-term strategy for the humanity, for the future, going out 200, 300, 400, 500 years. We're not going to be doing that. That's obviously, we're going to get better and better with technology. But what I do think is that, I'm taking care of business here. What I do think is that we will want to keep that oil and use it for petrochemical needs, where we're producing plastics and synthetic materials. That's what the oil is really valuable for. That's the wealth of the oil. So let's see. What is he saying here? Curious. But the fish have been poisoned enough. Responsibly done. You have responsibly done oil offshore oil drilling is safe. If you have well-managed safety and oversight inspection by the government and not what we've had, which has been a complete disaster, and the ethics that went into some of the things that went on in the Gulf oil disaster pointed to the government malfeasance and the way that they handled themselves, which is terrible. And so, you can blame industry all you want, and industry had a hand in this, but the government was ultimately at the beginning and end of this whole thing. They were deeply involved. And, at some point, it's individual ethics, individual responsibility, and even I know this sounds corny as hell, but, a belief in your country, a belief in doing the right thing, That seems to be gone by the wayside, and we need to get back to that as a country. We need to get back to being who we are as a country and proud of our country and proud of what we do and responsible to our fellow citizens and fellow human beings and fellow creatures, you know, even, you know, from an ecological perspective. But that's, oh, I see, Bin Laden. Well, you got me going, so I had to go with it. But, you know, I mean, that's the whole point here is that I really think that we can be responsible citizens of the earth and still use oil as a bridge to get out of this situation we're in with energy. And we don't even have an energy policy that's worth a damn in this country, you know, and I just get amazed at this stuff, that why we are still, after all these years, and I've seen, you know, I've lived through the first oil shortage, you know, and saw gasoline go, oh, my God, from 25 cents to 50 cents. Oh, my God, that was terrible. And now, now it's a whole lot more, and it's going to get worse. Let's see who we got out there. We got Curious Listener 1414, got Dan Adams. Dan's back. I thought he was going to sleep. Fire Witch is out there, and hi, Fire. I like your cat, Fire Witch. Yeah, Joy, that's nice. Frank's out there, got Open Wings with Hazel, got TKL Star and Gerber Daisy. No one's called in, so I have just been going kind of on my own. I don't know how I'm doing, guys. This is kind of the first time I've done a talk show that's kind of ranged all over the place like this. I'm definitely not trying to be Art Bell here, although I can sound like Art Bell. But I'm just kind of going with my instincts and trusting what I'm seeing out there. Name off some we've got about 19 minutes remaining. Name off some subjects that you want to need to discuss and throw a couple of things out there, and I'll pop those out so I'll look for any of that coming from you guys. But I'm going to go continue on with this energy thing because I think that we're going to be going through in the next 200 years as a species a real evolution towards fusion. Fusion power will be big. We will be, I think, with the general acceptance of the paranormal and spiritual realities, I think we're going to have casual, regular contact with the spirit world going on, and the electronics will be such that we will be able to speak to other dimensions. I know this is a bold prediction. I think that we will end up having a much more, I believe, and I'm an optimist, that we will have a much more peaceable bunch of people around. I think if we continue the way we're going, because I believe America is a good place, I think that we will, as a species, grow into a point where we will get past all these constant wars and constant anger and constant harping that we're doing now. I think we'll evolve, you know, out of necessity. TKL Star says, what's your favorite ways to clear your aura? I'll tell you what I use, and this is not anything special, but I'm trying to remember the name of the company here. Let me see if I can pull that up. That's, goodness gracious me. Let me go to Google. And it's Meditations. And it was a company that has kind of gone by the wayside, but I think that they're still having memberships out there. And I downloaded a bunch of their stuff. It's a meditation bunch out there, and I'm trying to remember their name, and I'm just I'm kind of at a loss here. But I do use meditation. You know, the bottom line is I'm using this meditation. Matter of fact, just give me a second. I'll go grab this. I'll be right back. I'm just going to play for a one-minute thing, and we will be right back, and I'll have that information.
Coming to you live from the Haunted Studios here in Shingle Springs, California, you're listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio.
I just posted it in the chat room. I had to go grab my MP3 player. It had that in there. Secretmeditations.com, and it's sort of a they had a really good concept when they first started, and it seems to have just kind of petered out into just kind of a static site. They're not doing much with it, but they I paid it for and bought the membership to get into this, and they had a bunch of meditations in there, and I downloaded pretty much everything, and I'm a member, and I really like their clearing meditations. They have some amazing stuff, and I have to admit, when I do my readings, one of the things I do before I go on air, by the way, if you guys want me to extend, say so, and I'll be willing to extend the show tonight. But what I do is I about 30 minutes before the show, I will go ahead and pop one of these on, and I will go in and do a meditation to get myself ready for the show. And I've been getting into the healing and cleaning meditations, and it seems to help me when I go to do my readings. The quality of my readings goes way up when I do the meditation before I come on air. So that's basically how I do that. I think that, I'm not a commercial here for secretmeditations.com. I'm just saying this is what I use. But there are plenty of good meditations out there that you can get. Just as long as you pick something and you stick with it, you can get great benefit from it. And it certainly helps me. I'm not the most original person when it comes to this stuff. I mean, I picked up, I've been reading extensively, a lot of books by John Edward, Lisa Williams, all the major mediums out there, John Holland, and they constantly talk about that. And to be a really effective good medium is you got to work. You got to work at it. You get off your butt and work. And so it is one of those things that I really thought it was a bunch of baloney at first, and now it's like I depend on it. Since I really got back into the game with being on the show and having regular shows and all that, I just committed to myself that I would do meditation pre-show. And John Edward was kind of the one that got me into that. He really talked about his routine before he goes out in public, and so I just emulated that. And it turned out it was the right thing to do. It's just amazing. I mean, I go into I go into that state for 15 minutes, come out, and I just pop onto the show, and I am ready, baby. And it just is I feel good. My energy is centered. I can feel my guides around. I can feel how things are going to be that night. I generally can predict pretty well how the show's going to go. So it's something else. But they have a chakra cleaning meditation to be on. To get back with you, a curious listener. They have that in there as part of the secret meditations thing. So, I think that they have like some free ones you can download there. So go ahead and check that out. We got about 12 minutes. So if you want me to extend, say so now. Otherwise, I'll just let it run out for the 12 minutes, and we'll call it a night. And then I will be back on Friday. So I was going to do a Cinco de Mayo show, but I think that I'm going to just go ahead and have a relaxing night, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday we'll do a set and have a great time. Let's see, what do we got out there? It's something about a medicine woman saying not to dye hair. Is it to conduit to the spirit world? I don't know about that. That's an interesting thing. I've heard people talk about having where they've had the surgery on the skull and they've had the bones removed, and it opens them up to like in front of the third eye and above the crown chakra, having a hole opened up, it causes all kinds of things. Gerber Daisy says extend. Okay, you talked me into it. All right, you got me there, Pilgrim. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to go in and hit that. So we'll extend. And again, the phone number. For those of you out there who wish to speak, 646-478-0377, and I'm going into the edit window. Come on. Gosh darn this thing. Okay, here we go. I like what Blog Talk did with some of the evolution they've done here. They've really, I kind of like what they've done with this whole bit with with the adding the pictures now and the new rotating banners, and the pages are a little more efficient. So I like where they've gone with that. So I'm just kind of giving them some kudos here. Some of the money I think that's going into us being charged to do our shows monthly, I think it's starting to kind of pay off. And there's a little more bandwidth available. It seems like the services are a little bit more reliable. Although I had a weird show here a few days ago where everything went to hell in a handbasket, but those things happen. That's part of the deal. So he can stop reading the chat. Oh, you don't want me reading the chat? Oh, that's not good. Okay, now I'm going to read it a bunch. you twisted his arm. Gerber Daisy says she's off tomorrow. Where are you off to? Are you just off? Are you off work, Gerber? I want to see what you're up to. Okay, if the soul stays with the body when we die, how do we communicate with dead people? The soul must carry memory of some sort, and therefore brain function. Well, you know, it's funny. I remember when I first got interested in all of this was I was reading books by a woman by the name of Mary Summer Rain, and she had I got my first introduction to people doing paranormal investigation through one of her books where she was talking with her mentor. Her teacher was called No Eyes. And the way No Eyes explained this to Mary Summer Rain as to how spirits and people pass into the other worlds, into the astral world, was that human beings are made of three components. And any spiritual entity, actually, it's going to be mind, body, spirit, of course. And the mind and body, of course, will die. You know, those are just the physical structures that receive spirit and through which spirit animates the body. But spirit itself is pure energy, but it has structure. It is a form of mass of its own, and it actually weighs something. There's actually been experiments done and some pretty darn good evidence to show that there is a mass to the soul. And that, I went ahead and extended to 38 minutes here. So we're still on there, guys. I went ahead and we're all set. But there's this structure to the soul. And what it means is that, they may not have a perfect memory. They may not remember as well as they did because the mind has gone through all these things. But that's only because they're seeing it through the filter of the current incarnation that they've been in. And they often get confused and are kind of stuck in that way, especially when we're dealing with spirits that have not fully crossed. So they do have memory, and when they get fully crossed over to the other side, it's much more easy for them to see all the lives they've lived, and they're much more full functioning in all respects. So my answer to that is that it's just when they're caught between the worlds, they get kind of, and No Eyes said it really best. She says they're stupid. They're stupid because they don't have the physical structures that they once had, and they're still stuck in the belief that they have a body, that they were what they once were. They're not seeing their soul in the way that it is now, and so they're caught in this zone, and they can't get out of it, and they need help to see what where they need to go and what they need to do. There are those that are aware that they're dead, and I have personal experience with seeing that. EVPs where I've had them ask me to help them cross over, and I've shown them how to work, help themselves, and been part of those kinds of experiences. And they're beautiful experiences to have when you actually show them they can help themselves. And they're so blown away. It's almost like a V8 moment for some of these poor spirits. You know, they're like, you mean I could have done this? Yeah. Duh. Well, that's because you're stupid, because you're caught between the world. Honestly, they're very thankful. And I've gotten some interesting and touching messages of thank yous back before they fully cross. You know, so I sometimes wonder what it's like for them after they've been stuck for 100 years and then they get over to the other side. It's like, what are they doing? You know, it's like, oh, better late than never. I don't know. Let's see. What do we got? Nobody's called in, so I'm just going to keep on doing what I do. Curious listener, she's read, or you've read a few of the Summer Rain books. Yeah, she's still around. And she had a lot of people come down on her and said she was an opportunist and she was a terrible human being and she was a fake and this and that. And I found her teachings to be right on the money. And one of her books, Phoenix Rising, was a virtual blow-by-blow account of everything happening in the world today. Dan, if you want to call in, I'm good with that. I'm open. You know, it's just amazing to see this woman who has did all this amazing writing, and that she got pretty well savaged by the media and by people who really were not. I'm just going to go with the notion that they were jealous. I don't know. I don't know what caused the vitriol with her, but she really was pretty well raked over the coals, and she just kind of disappeared into the woodwork. And I think she is going to try to write some more. I've heard some stirrings that she's going to be back. So, you know, if I could figure out a way to get her on air, I think that would be one hell of a good interview, is to bring her on. So I may try to look her up. I do see a caller out there. It's probably probably Dan. Hello?
Probably not.
Who we got?
How you doing? It's a curious listener.
Oh, hi, curious listener.
How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. Gosh, I finally got rescued. I was. How have I been doing for a guy who's been sitting there, you know, going from one damn end of the universe to the other?
Pretty good. I wouldn't normally. It's my first time to your show, so I wouldn't normally just call in and everything. But since the last question got asked, it made me think about a whole different subject concerning, you know, our souls and or spirit, whichever terminology a person uses. You know how people are always so fascinated with biological genealogy?
Yeah.
And, you know, and they want to trace it back to the 16th century and everything else like that, right? And
yeah.
I'm just saying, like, if a person believes in reincarnation, and if a person believes that they could be reincarnated into any number of different races, the different gender, then it stands to reason to me that, you know, three life, to, you know, let's say at the great-great-great-grandfather level or something for me, I might have been alive then, and I might have been, you know what I mean, like somebody in Tuktoyaktuk for all, you know what I'm saying? Like we,
I mean,
my family biology means something in terms of my biological or my physical health. You know what I mean? Like blood type or something that runs in the family in terms of, you know, ailments or whatnot. But if I was you know what I'm saying? Is like the best way I can explain is, you know, like let's take the Hatfields and the McCoys, whom I don't know how long their big feud went, but it went forever, didn't it?
Long-standing.
Multiple generations, right? And so just in my very simple example, I might one time have been, in one of my lives, I might have been a Hatfield, and in one of my lives, I might have been a McCoy. Or in one of my lifetimes, I might have been an Indian, a North American Indian, and in another lifetime, I might have been one of the British people that came over and you know, shot an Indian in the back or something like that. You know what I mean? So I just wonder why, you know, some people have dodged this question with me just by saying, well, we're all in the same, you know, we all reincarnate. So if you're involved in my life, this lifetime, you're involved in every one of my lifetimes, and we might all have different roles or whatnot. But to me, it's a little bit, like, I just think, like, why, if I've had five lifetimes since the 16th century, let's say, then theoretically my biology would trace back in five completely different family trees, if you know what I mean. Do you kind of know what I'm saying?
Let's put it this way. You know, I've studied quite a bit on various different texts on this topic, and there's general agreement and there's some general disagreements, and I'll just go with the general agreement to begin with. Is it And I don't remember the exact year that this was struck from the Bible, but I think it was 565 A.D. There was a council, Christian council, that got together, and they decided to strike reincarnation from the Bible. But before that point, reincarnation was generally accepted in the Christian view. And a lot of other, you know, of course, the Eastern religions and philosophies and some, I guess, South American beliefs and around the world, reincarnation was a generally accepted, you know, standard because there was so much evidence for it. And so I believe that, you know, number one, reincarnation does exist. But the general mechanism, there's plenty of disagreement because to really get to know it, you have to take the trip, you know, and not a lot of people have come back from that to really talk about it. There's the near-death experience crowd, but they only get to stay for a short time. They don't get the full flavor of it. But what generally the belief is that there are soul groups, and people come right. And come and go from those soul groups. So over a period of you know, several hundred years, you may be in one particular soul group, but that does not mean that you are forever in that one soul group and that's your only evolution. You're only right. In the soul group as long as you need to be in it for the lessons that you're learning. And then when you evolve to a new level, you may go to a whole new family, you know, soul group, and continue on. It's kind of like a graduating class type thing. So, you know, that's sort of the take on it. The disagreements come into the nuances, you know, of, you know, what the exact structures are and all this. I'll tell you, to me, it's kind of like if you were to look at the way the school system works in this country, you know, and you go around from school to school, and they've each got their own way of doing things, and yet you can transfer, and you can get credits, and you can do this and that. I really think that's sort of what we do when we're in that world, and that things are much more complicated. Yes. And yet simple than we would ever think that they are. It's just you know, I mean, you could put a lot of thought into this, and you would still be no closer to it, but I think the general gist of it's there, just being aware that, right. You know, yes, reincarnation is real. It does happen. There's plenty of evidence for it because people, especially children, recall their former lives and start talking about it and can name names. So, you know, there's something to it. But honestly, I think that the soul group is more like a class, if that would be the right word for it, than anything else. So, I mean, does that kind of go where you were going?
Yeah, no, and that's usually the answer that people will come up with, you know. But, I mean, I guess I'm just kind of saying, like, you know, you and I aren't related in, you know, I mean, in any way that, let's just say that, you know, that we're not related in any way, you know, yet. You know, I can't really articulate it any better than I have. And so far, that's the best answer anyone's come up with, is the idea of the soul family. But I was just drawing a comparator to, you know, why, you know, I trace my life back to the 16th, you know, my family back, as I sit in this body, back to the 16th century to a certain person, you know, and I might have been alive at the same time as that person and not related to that person at all back then when that person was alive.
I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, I am absolutely certain, you know, that if I were to trace back some of my lives, that I was likely involved in some of those lives. But when I did, and I do believe in regression hypnosis to be able to see a past life, and I've had the experience myself. And, you know, my last life was locally in the area where I'm at. I was actually, you know, an Indian, an American Indian.
Right. Right.
And I have, you know, I have no Indian blood in my family, and yet and I was not some highfalutin guy. I was just a run-of-the-mill warrior guy, you know, trying to live my life, and I got caught in a war, and I got killed. And what was funny is I was killed in a spear. A spear went through me. That's what I saw in my past life. I had a fascination with spears and with knives, and a horror of them at the same time. Right. And I have an extensive collection of different different weapons. So, you know, and so I look at it now and I know where that came from, you know, but,
right.
But by, you know, could I trace that on my family tree? Absolutely not.
Right. Exactly.
No.
exactly. Anyways, they probably have Dan probably called in, so I can let you go. I appreciate you taking a stab at that question for me.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on. Hope to see you in the future.
You betcha. Take care, hey?
Okay, take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. That was kind of nice. I like that. The take on reincarnation is, my feeling for it is that it is an absolute fact in my mind. I just can't fathom a universe that you would live in that would expect you to get it all right the first time on a life coming through, and that you're supposed to have it all figured out. And then you have judgmental religions that say, you're going to be judged, you know. I don't think you can get it right no matter how hard you try. It's just too imperfect of a thing. You just have to grow. And there are those exceptional spirits who are very old that show their true divinity because of how old they are and how much experience they've gained. And they become very wise people who influence people just by who they are. And that's what reincarnation does. It really burns into the soul the true wisdom, and it just starts showing up more and more as these people go from life to life. I'm going to go ahead and answer the next call. I got two callers out there, so here we go. I think that's Dan out there. Hello. Hello. Going once.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello?
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 Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Oh, this is Chris. Are you talking to me?
I think it could be Chris. I don't know.
Hi, Chris from, I don't know. You said this could be Dan. I'm not able to get into the chat room. It's Chris from the Queen Mary.
Oh, hi, Chris. How are you?
How are you? I finally found you again.
Yeah, I've been doing mediumship, and I've been doing, all this stuff. I got my group, been running like crazy, and, been dealing with family things.
I've been following you on Facebook, so I was like, oh, you've got a show tonight. I'll pop on and say hello, but I can't get into the chat room. It says I can't get in, so I haven't been able to chat along with you.
If you register, I've had some trouble with some of the guest listeners that come in, and I've got a problem. I'll just say I have a problem with another host.
I already knew that about you.
And I just go ahead and I kick some of these folks out and kind of keep the chat room nice and clean, if you will. So if you register in on a blog and then get an account, then you can pop in. I probably kicked you out, and I apologize for that. But
you
it was,
did. And then I signed in under my name, but it still wouldn't let me back in. So it probably just blocked my URL or whatever. But anyway, I just wanted to say hello and see if you're coming back down to the Queen Mary anytime soon.
Well, I'll tell you what. Me and Spencer, Spencer Hughes, my friend, he's my case manager, and he's host of Fox Across America. So I've got him and then me working together, and we're planning our caseload for the year. I would like to do that with Queen Mary. I'd like to do that later in the year. That would be a good trip down. That's only about an 8-hour drive, and a nice big drive to get there. Well, hey, I've gone a lot farther. I mean, I've driven to, I drove by myself out to Arizona, and that was 2.5 days. I was kicking around Arizona and having a great time in September. So an 8-hour drive, that's nothing. Just get up in the morning and you're there in the afternoon, and then go ghost hunting. But I had a great time there meeting you guys, and we went on that, we went down into the cargo hold.
Such a great trip. Chris and I just want to go back so bad again. We just can't stand it. That was such a phenomenal trip.
It was. I mean, some of the EVPs, I think I captured German EVPs on that. And for those in the audience listening, Queen Mary, you know, is absolutely, you know, and back me up on this, Chris, is that it's haunted to the gills.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah.
You step in and you go, oh, my God, this ship is haunted to the it's
it
like
made me a believer.
Did I tell you what happened to me when I first checked in?
Oh, did you get that real queasy feeling like we did?
this goes way beyond that. I think I had my first full-on what looked like a flesh-in-the-face ghost experience. I was checking in, and when you go into Queen Mary, you're on, I think, MDEC. I think it's MDEC or I'm trying to remember
think,
which.
Yeah, I think it is. It's like in the middle.
Yeah, it's MDEC, and then you go in, and there's the hotel check-in is sort of midships. And so I walk up, and I stand in line, I wait to get my room, and I had a stateroom, and my stateroom was 8025. What you do is you check in, and then I just walked around a corner, and 200 feet down was my room on the right. And so I got my stuff, and I had a bunch of I had all my paranormal gear. It was all heavy, and I'm, you know, lugging this stuff down, and I've had a long day. I'm tired. I just want to kick back a while and then go grab dinner. So I'm going down, and I run into this impeccably dressed gentleman who's obviously a member of the ship's staff. And I'm dumping stuff down, and he looks at me and starts talking to me. And he starts, out of the blue, I don't even ask him anything. He starts telling me about the history of the ship. And I'm going, well, I'm sitting there nodding, and it was interesting stuff. I was going, oh, wow, this is stuff. I could use this, you know, because I'm going to be broadcasting a show tonight, and I'm going to be doing this and that. And I get going talking with him, and it was really good stuff. And we talked for a good 10 minutes. And it was sort of weird because I got a weird vibe from this guy. I couldn't quite pin why I was feeling the way I was with him. And finally I said, you know, because the straps were burning into and I said, hey, I'll tell you what, I says, I'm really interested in what you've got to say. Let me just dump this stuff and I'll be right back out. And he says, okay. So I open the door, I go in, I'm not gone more than 10 seconds and realize this is, the hallway is like something out of The Shining. I mean, it's like,
oh,
they're, you know,
yeah, they're like, it's exactly like a hall of mirrors. It goes forever.
Yeah,
you're right.
It's like, you could not, you'd have to break at a dead run and make a lot of noise to get away. I go in and dump my stuff. I turn around, I come back, and there's this guy is gone. And, I mean, I'm going, where the hell did he go? And I ran to the right of A025, and when you run to the right, it's a little bit closer to get to the next bulkhead opening where you end up, and there's a big staircase. There's a grand staircase back there, and it takes you up different levels of the ship. I go tear ass in there and come running out, and I'm looking, and I'm waiting to hear somebody running, and there's nothing happening. And I'm going, where did this guy go? And I looked around for the remaining time, and I think I met you guys that night at dinner. But I spent the whole time walking around in that ship looking for the guy with this uniform style on, and no one had this uniform style. He was the only one that dressed this way. And this guy disappeared. And I swear to God, I had a full-on encounter with probably a friendly spirit who was just showing me the ropes.
No, I believe that. I truly do. That place is... We had a couple strange feelings. I was in one area of the ship, and the ship doesn't move for anybody out there that doesn't really realize it because it's so protected. You might be able to describe it a little bit better, but you're not floating, so the ship really isn't moving. But all of a sudden, and I don't get seasick, I just had this closed in feeling, and I started feeling nauseous, and I was really hot, and it was just this overwhelming feeling of kind of despair and sadness, and then it just passed. So, you know, it just was like a couple minutes in this one area. And I just stood there, and there was an old clock that was right there, and I was looking at the clock when it happened, and then the feeling just disappeared.
Yeah,
I looked over at Chris, and I was like, wow, that's weird. And I explained my feeling, and she said, oh, yeah, that happens, that feeling happens. And, you know, I was just blown away by it.
It It is bar none, just pound for pound, right up there in the top three haunted places I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it didn't matter where you went on that ship, you were feeling things. And I had a picture that I sent in to one of the famous instrumental transcommunication groups. And I just cannot remember the name right off the bat. It's late at night. I've had a long day, but what I did is I took a picture down on below M deck, the next deck down, and I was where those kind of stainless steel elevators are, and everything is stainless steel.
Yes. You know, yes.
And I went around, if you were coming down out of those elevators, you turned left and you go around the corner. There's like a storage hallway that takes you back into a restricted crew area. And I took a shot of it. I just got a feeling I should take a picture of it with my little Kodak digital camera. And the flash did not go off. And so I get back home and I'm looking at the pictures and I see faces looking out this this window. To this door, and I'm going, first I thought the flash fired, and then I looked at the data, the metadata from the JPEG, and it tells you all the, things that the camera did when it took the picture, and there was no flash fired. It did not fire. So I blew that up in Photoshop and really looked at it more carefully, and I had face after face after face looking at me, out at me.
Oh, wow.
And I sent this in, and I said, to this particular team in Reno that does this work, and they came back and said, oh, yeah, you got – it's not just faces, because I counted three or four. They said more like 20. And,
wow.
It was a trip. But, I mean, but the one thing was when we went down in that bulkhead, remember how cold it got down there?
Yes.
Oh, man, that was serious.
Yes, and Chris so wishes that she went, because she didn't go down there because she had such a bad vibe, a bad feeling. Remember, she stayed up above, and she didn't go down with the rest of us. And she so wishes she did now, because after we told her what it felt like and what we had experienced down there.
Oh, yeah. There was that 8-degree temperature drop, which, that doesn't sound like much, but when you're inside a closed ship underwater,
with no wind,
40 feet below, now you stop to think about that. This is an enclosed area of the ship that is grounded for all intents and purposes, and there's a bunch of rock around the ship that forms kind of like an artificial closed-in harbor for the ship. So there's no currents that change temperature. So you're dealing with a managed energy state. So when you you experience a major temperature drop in an enclosed space like that, that's a lot of energy shifting. And
I felt a slight breeze go across my hand and my legs. I could feel it in my face just as the temperature was going down. It's very odd.
Yeah, there was a lot of strange stuff happening down there. I mean, that temperature shift, we had the EVPs, some German EVPs were picked up. The sense of, yes, and I was feeling, because I stayed around to the left side near the, because there were so many of us in there, a bunch of folks went off around the corner and sat down. And when you get down into the lower bulkhead areas of the ship where the storage was done, and also the German POWs were kept. That's why we were down there. You run into, you have to walk very carefully. It's extremely dangerous down there, and I was surprised they even let us down.
I was too.
Yeah, because it's an insurance nightmare. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you're climbing down this ladder that's just attached to the side of the wall.
Yeah, and it's like 60 feet up. If you fall, you're dead. And or you're going to have a bad recovery
headache.
Time. It was what was striking was the amount of temperature shifts and the winds that you would feel and breezes going by you, and the electric feeling in the air that would come and go.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely haunted in there. And these POWs that were down there, I mean, they were down there for quite some time on these transatlantic voyages. I think the ship did 1,001 crossings of the Atlantic.
History.
Yeah, and I mean, there were a lot more people died on the ship than they really talk about. They were packing soldiers. There was at one point, I think they had close to 15 to 20,000 troops aboard at one point for a crossing to get troops over. And they were sailing in zigzag patterns with the ship, too, to avoid the U-boats. And Hitler had pretty much a bounty out for the Queen Mary, a big bounty. And so anybody who got it was going to get rewarded really well. But they cut a ship in two.
Yes, I don't remember which ship that was, but there was an accident. Yes.
Yeah, and what happened was one of the ships, I think it was a British ship, zigged when it should have zagged, and what happened was they were under orders to continue and not stop and help these sailors. 300 sailors, British sailors, died as a result of this accident. And so Queen Mary just cut it, you know, sliced the ship to pieces. The sheer bulk, you know, and with all that momentum, it was impossible to stop. Damaged the front of the Queen Mary, and they had to, you know, get repairs later on, but they were able to control the damage they had. But the other ship was just completely destroyed, and I think that they did have some survivors from the ship, you know, that was cut in two, but a lot of people died. And there is playback memories that seem to occur, although it's getting less and less over time, but there, you know, people have recorded sounds of the accident up forward on the forward part of the ship, which we didn't get to. But yes, it's if you ever get the chance, go there. I think I'll make a commitment to go there this year. I would like
definitely. I'll watch you and you know, I'll follow you on Facebook and we'll keep in contact, because Chris and I will definitely meet you and do that again. And it was just a great experience. So I'll keep in touch with you and watch your schedule. Maybe we can do that.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I would be open to that in the August timeframe. You know, that would be probably the best time for me to get out, like late August.
Okay.
I would like to do that. You know, we can talk off air, but I think I can talk a couple other people into coming out with me.
Okay.
And we could go for a good. I'd like to see if that guy is still running the night tours and stuff. I thought that was a great target. Yeah, he did a great job. I liked.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
Yeah. So what I'm talking about is there's a. I think it was a Friday night we did this, and they had a Friday night ghost tour, and it was $75, and it was the best $75 I've ever spent because I mean we got the run of the ship. And it just had
he extended the tour because we were so interested, and there was so much activity. He was even amazed at the activity that we were all feeling. Remember, I think we walked around the ship for an additional 2 hours that night.
He took us even into the part where the engines had been removed, and there was stuff going on. And there was that crazy room that they put us in. It was kind of claustrophobic. It had all the...
Yes, the little room.
Yeah, that one gave me the creeps. I mean, I have to admit, I don't usually get a little freaked out about, you know, being in a closed space, but that one got me... I wanted out of there after about 5 minutes. I was like, this ain't good, you know? But I mean, I got one EVP at the end when I was just getting set to leave. I kind of was doing my case notes, and this one spirit comes on and says, "Get the hell out of here!"
Nice.
I'm like, okay.
I'll see you next time.
Yeah, but you know, he didn't say get the hell out of here and never come back. So I take it I have an invitation. But you know, the one I want to go back to was did I ever send you guys the, I've got it on my website. There was an EVP that sounded a lot like the actor Nicolas Cage. And it was in the great grand ballroom area, the dining room with the big kind of funky looking clock. And it was all
kind of. Oh, where they used to have the party.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, this guy comes on. I'm out there alone doing EVPs and walking around, and I get this funky sounding language like I've never heard before. Comes in Class A EVP, hits, and it says this weird stuff. And I it was just it sounded like Latin. And and there was also some English, and he's talking about being forgiven. Forgive me for this. And then he says these words that are just wild. And so I want to go back there. That's the one I want to hit, is find out what the hell was that. And I'm going to bring the EVP back with me and play that in there and see if I can get a response out of this guy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I would like to see because I was walking around and I was getting hits all over the place, but that one was absolutely, I'd say in my top 10 EVPs, that was right up there. And amazing, amazing catch there. So I don't know what you guys got, but I mean, my stuff, I was more than happy. It was worth every cent I paid to be there.
Chris got a lot. I had weird activity with my camera. I remember my camera stopped working, and as soon as I got off the boat, it started working again. Chris got an EVP, a really good recording of that little girl's voice saying hello around the pool area. I think we tried to send that to you. I don't know if we were ever able to or not, but it just a fantastic experience. So we'll have to plan that. I'll get my schedule, and I know we have a family trip planned the beginning of August, but we'll get in touch, and we'll maybe do something the end of August and get together on that.
Okay.
We'll do that. We'll definitely make a plan.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, now that you know where I'm at, I'm on, you know, I tend to be on more weekends. I'm looking at going to Friday, Saturday, Sunday shows. So, you know, definitely stay in touch. And, yeah, we'll do Facebook. So, I'll look for you, a message from you on Facebook right after I get off the show. We're almost out of time. But I'm really glad you called in. God,
I don't know if somebody else is on hold, so I won't monopolize your time. I'll get off and let somebody else chat with you real quick. And, it was really nice talking with you again. We'll talk again soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, my dear.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now. Hey, kind of a nice impromptu show tonight. You know, it started off with me doing all the talking, and, you know, I've got a few callers that kind of reached in and say, Mike, sorry, you know what? But you guys are real troopers for staying in with me. The curious listener, 1414, called in. Thank you, Dan. I know you tried to call in. I'll catch you on the next one. I promise we'll get you in. Gerber Daisy, I was trying to get you in, but I got the 111. I thought it was you. Gerber Daisy DM, another big regular with us. Good to see you. Spirit Baby 785, hello. And TKL Star had plenty to say, too, in the chat room today. Great show. I had a good time. So we are going to wind it down, and I will see you guys at the end of the week. I'm going to be doing... on the coming, I think it's the Friday show, we'll be doing some work with the Ovilus and also be trying our new SP7 spirit box, if you will, and see how that goes, and try some new technologies and see what we get for captures from the spirit world. And we got our old standby method, and just as a backup too. So be ready with your questions for the other side. And they are more than gracious to come through and work with us. So we've got a great partnership with them. So with that said, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio Soul Stream, another edition in the can, and we will see you guys later. And God bless you all, and thanks for being part of us. Bye now.
Coming to you from the Broken Tree Ranch in Shingle Springs, California, you are listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio in Studio B, live on blogtalkradio.com.